All right. Okay, now back to something very serious. And I want to note off, make note of it, says this before we get started. The RAF Bentwaters case is of personal interest to me. Years ago, when I started in this research business, I had the opportunity to interview John Burroughs, and this was a very fascinating case. And again, as I mentioned earlier, there has never been anything like this written before. This is Larry Warren, who co-authored the book Left at Eastgate, which we're going to be talking about tonight, is the first time a book of this nature has ever been written. And it's my pleasure to welcome to the program, in 1983, Larry Warren became the first honorably discharged military witness to go public about the cover-up under his own name. He has lectured on the Bentwaters incidents extensively in the United States and Japan. His co-author, Peter Robbins, is the executive assistant for the Intruders Foundation. He has researched the subject of UFOs for more than 20 years and has lectured extensively. It's my pleasure to welcome to the program tonight Peter Robbins and Larry Warren. Good evening, guys.
Hi, Michael.
Glad to have you on the program.
A pleasure to be here.
Okay. First of all, this book is due out this month, and you say it's already in some of the stores in, around the country.
It is indeed. It is appearing in bookstores now, and if your listeners don't see it there, they should ask their local bookstores to order it.
Okay. All right. Now, Larry, will you please start out for us tonight by rehashing the events kind of in an encapsulated form? What actually took place out there? What is the basis of this book?
Yeah, Mike, for the sake of time, the events in question involve three nights, and you mentioned John Burroughs, who was involved on the first night and very peripherally on the third night, which is the heart of the book, where if there were contact made, it was on that third night, and possibly the first, it's turning out also. Basically, we're a very strategically important facility, RAF Bentwaters and Woodbridge, which were the same 81st Tactical Fighter Wing in Suffolk, East Anglia, in Britain. And on December, I believe it was Christmas Eve or just after, three security police saw lights go down the woods. They went out to investigate these, thinking it was an aircraft that had crashed. They went into the woods. They had a series of very bizarre events take place. There was a fourth person that joined them that ended up missing for quite a time, so it had there was a missing person element to this also. It was a very serious series of events. They lost communication with the base. They were found wandering 4 hours later and claiming to have encountered a triangular-shaped object on the ground that took off at a tremendous speed after a series of events that happened. The next night, these objects returned and did what appeared to be a grid search over the area, according to other witnesses that saw that. And on the third night, these objects came back and sat down on the ground once again. On the first night and third, trace marks were left. Physical evidence was left. A number of us were called out to the site. Films and photographs were taken of a craft or an object on the ground. I saw it myself. I never saw it fly, per se. There was a solid object on the ground. There was a life form seen in association with that that was not human, in my standards, or probably anyone else's.
Mm-hmm.
And senior people on the base witnessed this, were on the site. There were no less than 50 to 80 personnel involved on that third night. Open channels on our radios. Everyone who was working on that shift that night heard some accounts of these events taking place. And civilians witnessed a number of aspects of these events as well.
That's quite a story.
Well, that's just the
tip
of the iceberg.
Yeah, sure. Okay, new book, Left at Eastgate, which deals with the 1980 Bentwaters incident in the UK, which, by the way, made international news when it happened, and I'm sure a lot of you out there may remember something about this, but this is a very interesting case, and it's full of intrigue. Larry, getting back to what we were talking about before the break, now, in the book, you bring out several different things. You and Peter bring out several different things that might be at play here. Can you help separate the theories for us? I mean, are we dealing with a real UFO? And I know that mind control has entered into the foray as a possibility. Can you help kind of separate those for us? What do you think happened out there?
Well, this is what I think happened. I mean, I hear a lot of theories from people that weren't there, but I think the one thing that all the participants would agree on is that this was a this phenomena that was there was not from Earth. It was not created by any government on Earth. It wasn't a hallucination. It wasn't a lighthouse. It wasn't a satellite reentry. I've seen that on the internet. Brilliant theory. Well, we didn't go see a satellite on the ground, I can assure you.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when everything, you know, I've been around this stuff actually for a long time in public, and usually because it is so complex, a lot of the people that you would think, you know, they want answers to this. Is this phenomena real or not? Well, it certainly is. It was real at Bentwaters and was just that. It was something that was not from this realm at all, whether it's from another planet or whatever, I don't know. And I don't know if the people that debriefed us knew. But it was a non-terrestrial event. There was a non-human presence there, and there was technology that they traveled in, apparently, that was not built by any government on this Earth. And from colonels on down have gone on record about this, saying that at the very minimum, that's what it was. It was not a number of other theories. After the fact, though, I believe the intelligence community made, namely the National Security Agency, and our book kind of blows the lid on their role in the phenomena, at least as to our experience and my experience, in relation to Bentwaters. After the fact, there was some meddling and some things that went on with personnel, because they didn't want this out. It's that, you know, this phenomenon, the subject, is the biggest secret our government holds. There's no question about it. The difference with Roswell and Bentwaters, this is the best-known UFO incident outside of this country. In America, even though CNN did its highest-rated special assignment on it in the 80s, four-night thing with a number of witnesses, and numerous treatments on tabloid programs like Unsolved Mysteries and things like that, which I thought were horrible, this is the one case over Roswell. I mean, Roswell is an interesting story. Sure, it happened, but this is the one you can take to court because there's a chain of evidence that any jury would hear and any judge would have to enter in to a legal hearing. It's almost presented like a legal brief if we could do that, because there is a phenomenal chain of events. And like I always say, this is the one event that will not go away.
And like I said earlier, you guys have done very well in bringing this all out in the book. Now, since the aspect of mind control is involved in this thing, possibly.
After the fact.
How do you know, though, that maybe some aspects of whatever you remember, how do you separate, say, what they might have implanted in your memory, how do you separate that from what actually happened?
Well, that was simple, because there were what they or these people attempted to do. I mean, there's two. That's a very heavy element of the book. It's either that what we saw in the aftermath within this facility on the base, which is really there, and you know that's why they won't let these closed bases be used for anything, and which is kind of unusual, seeing they need revenue in that part of Britain right now. There was a lot of secret R&D over there. You know, that's not a— well, it might be a surprise to American researchers who chose to ignore this event for so long. They're not really going to have a choice much longer. But Bentwaters' sister base was Nellis in Nevada.
Yeah.
So the people that get all happy over Area 51, there is a connection. And in 82, I would have rotated to Nellis, actually. We went back and forth. So it's after the fact. And there was other things that, if there was any meddling, it was not dealing with the event. I can clearly go back to the site of these events and mark out exactly where I stood, this and that,
right,
and thing. That has not changed.
Okay. Now, let's go to the area. Let's talk about the area a little bit. In the book here, there's numerous references to Suffolk County in the United Kingdom as being the origination point of, say, witchcraft. Now, being that the twin bases are, you know, situated in these areas, what is the significance of this in the UFO incident, or is there any?
There's no connection other than that it's a side element that is true.
Just makes the area more mysterious.
Well, it is, and there is a lot of witchcraft and the black arts. Some folks practiced it in the Middle Ages, of course, and still do, I imagine. But there were a lot of ghost stories that were quite wonderful and things like that. And there was a German pilot that was allegedly shot down, and his ghost was seen on Woodbridge Field called East End Charlie. I never saw it. But a lot of those legends kind of went by the wayside after December of 1980.
Now, I want to jump to one thing real quick, and I want to kind of back into it after we talk about it real quick. You mentioned in the book, at the back of the book, or at the end of the book, Peter, yourself, and both of you are writing about this, that there is a particular portion of a conversation that you had with Colonel Hault, who was, Larry, help me out here. Colonel Hault was what? What was his position there?
At the time of the events, he was a deputy base commander of both facilities.
Okay.
And but not the senior person, the most senior person involved. That person is chosen to be protected for a number of reasons.
Okay, you bring. Okay, well, you bring out in the book that you had a conversation with Colonel Hault.
Yeah, we have a verbatim transcript.
Right, and a very excellent transcript, by the way. And
it's interesting.
Yeah, it is. What is the import of what took place there? And like I said, I want to back into this in the next couple of segments on the program. What was the import of what happened there? The UFO did something, and then this whole incident, maybe justification for the secrecy, was because of what happened there.
Right.
What took place?
What that is he had us turn the tape recorder off a few times, and we encapsulated, you know, it was all recorded with his permission and published, obviously, with his knowledge. But it is the most extensive interview. It's never been on, he's never gone on record like he did with us, and shown so many different angles to this thing, because he was command personnel, and they knew certainly more than I did at the time. But basically what he told us was because, and he can't admit this publicly, which is very strange, we had the largest stockpile of tactical nuclear weapons in all of NATO, secretly housed against all treaties with Britain at these two facilities, and not even at Greenham Common, where the anti-nuclear movement suspected they might be.
Mm-hmm.
That was a diversion. We had them, and we were backline for all of, you know, the NATO forces against Warsaw Pact at that time. And so we housed this one megaton yield bombs, battlefield strength nuclear weapons. And these objects came in, and not only did they set down, not only was their life form seen, not only did personnel potentially get abducted by these things on the first night, which we don't delve into too much. This is for them to do when they're ready. Is that they fired Mr. Hault made an actual on-site audio tape that has been played numerous times on programs now. By now, a lot of people that follow the subject probably be familiar with. And it's 18 minutes of 4 hours of audio, and you hear him talk about pencil-thin beams of light coming from these objects down to the ground, because not only was there one on the ground on the third night, the sky was full of its friends. And these, not only that, these objects fired these pencil-thin beams of light through the bunkers on where the missiles were stored in the weapon storage area. Potentially, he didn't go that far into it. I know through my own experience what happened to the warheads. There were some problems with them. We had a tactical team come in from Germany the next day. Mr. Hault will claim they doesn't know what they were doing there. He couldn't find out. Well, he certainly would know, because
sure,
it was in a command
capacity.
But you know, the non-military people would believe, you know, what they say. It's just not the case. And they came in to check the damage to the arsenal. You know,
this is all very reminiscent of the 75 overflighter penetration security at Malmstrom Air Force Base in, I think it was in Montana.
Well, it was all the northern tier SAC bases that had problems like that, even up to Loring, Maine. And Timothy Good has set a precedent that, you know, obviously this is not unusual. But the problem here is, once again, back to a legal issue, is that our government and the British government say that these events, though something happened, though they lie, if you've read the book, you can see that you see how the press deals with it, you see how the public affairs people in the military and government and senators and congressmen, who are all named in our book, are evasive, basically lying throughout for whatever their reasons. And suddenly you have them saying, well, okay, something happened, but it was of no defense significance to the United States or Britain. But we can counter that with one of the senior people's own words, that these things fired beams of light down onto these weapons where they were housed. Now, if that isn't defense significant,
it would be.
It is.
My guests are Larry Warren and Peter Robbins. We're talking about their new book, Left at Eastgate, and it's about the Bent Waters incident in 1980. Guys, I want to go back to, let's see here. I've got all these questions. I don't know if I'm going to get to cover them all in an hour. Let's move now to the mysterious agency, the National Security Agency. You talk about some dealings, Larry, with Jim Greenfield.
Yeah.
Tell us who this person is.
Well, that's the name he gave me and showed credentials, official credentials, back in the 80s. And the reason this agency approached me is simply that, they tried to make it simply that they knew I had gone public about these events. They didn't know about the events in question. They didn't want to know, did I have an axe to grind, and did I intend on divulging our strength of nuclear weapons at that time, Cold War, you know, in the early 80s?
Mm-hmm.
What, did I have an axe to grind? What do I need to divert? This is their guys that are approaching me, because we really don't want that to happen. You know, this is a major defense thing. The Soviets are always trying to get at the bases and all this, and this can't come out. We don't want to know about the rest. Well, in the second contact, it was the first time I was contacted was via phone, and there are witnesses to all this. I mean, this really happens, and there are agencies that deal with the people that, especially military private, are involved in this stuff. Other witnesses to this have even found listening devices in their vehicles, and, you know, you're freer, you speak freer probably in a vehicle, but, you know, they do that kind of thing. So their main worry was that I talked about the nuclear weapons there, and thus we would have a defense issue, and it would give more credence to these events, which mm-hmm. they don't want to do.
Sure.
Now, this gentleman was a real human being. He worked for the National Security Agency, which I was not familiar with, but it turned out when we were debriefed over at Bentwaters, we were debriefed by the Navy, Department of Navy, ONI, not Air Force, and like Colonel Holt says, the Air Force is on the sidelines.
Mm-hmm.
Through this whole thing. So the Air Force does not run the information on this phenomena. Navy is one of the paramount guys. That's for smarter people than me to figure out why. And then the Armed Forces Security Services, which is a field arm of the NSA, were also part of the debriefing at Bentwaters. So we've connected those two agencies and groups. And then as it progressed, these people wanted me to alter certain parts of the event, keep certain senior people out of this, you know, because they really look at it that it's, you know, it's just loonies.
Well, what do you think they're trying to hide? Well, I mean, yeah.
It's down to the simple thing is that I believe something happened at Roswell, more in the balloon, for mm-hmm. sure. But once again, we come back, there's really no evidence, just a lot of good stories that are probably 85% true, you know, but you can't go to court on stories. If mine was just a story and I was alone, I wouldn't bother with any of it. But, I think in 47, and Pete Robbins would probably agree with me, is that something happened at Roswell. They, you know, you saw the National Security Act of 47 get enacted right after those events.
Mm-hmm.
We had something bigger than the Russian threat. They chose to start lying 50 years ago, basically. And then again, who in your listening audience would be surprised if we found out they were lying about one more thing?
Well, do you think they've had contact with it?
Oh, yeah. Well, they did at Bentwaters. I mean, I don't know if there was communication, but there could have been. It was close enough. It was a real phenomenon. It was an intelligence behind it that showed itself, and mm-hmm. it showed its overwhelming ability to outmaneuver anything we have, and vastly superior. And if people don't want to accept that, you know, the bottom line is, you know, people like me, I think we write books in the long run just as a mode of communication, because the press and other UFO researchers, God help us, distort things to their own safety zone. And unfortunately, there's not much of a safety net with this. They are here. They've been here a long time, and our government knows it, because little old me knows it, so I can't be the top dog. Let me add, Michael, that one of the main reasons for covering it up is to cover up the fact we've been covering it up. It means that every president, liberal, conservative, Republican, Democrat, since Harry Truman, is an unindicted co-conspirator.
Sure.
You need a place to start with a nonpartisan issue. This is it.
You could really, this kind of stuff could really unravel things.
It's about time. Something
sure.
has to.
Yeah. Something's got to do it.
Life and many other people. And people even died. There was, you know, some people were so religiously challenged, Michael, by these events. And there was no safety net set up for us at that time. I believe this stuff happened, so I wasn't really surprised that it was covered up. But our whole world and our whole view of our world and our government at the age of 19 for me and probably some other guys in their 30s and 40s was forever changed without a, not even a pat on the back as thanks.
Well, we're going to talk about that, too, in the next segment. What about the story that something was flown from Germany to the site there? You touch on that in the book.
Yeah, that, I can kill that real quick. That is basically an evolution of the true thing is that a plane, a tactical team, came from Germany to look at the ordnance, and it was probably also a tactical team that was there to deal with the UFO incidents that had happened. That was the morning of the 29th of December.
Okay. So they were there to
but
maybe...
But no, not parts in the fixed UFOs okay. and all this stuff, and I've been totally... slandered with that for years. I've never said it.
Okay. What is RAF Bodzi? Where is it and what is its connection to Bentwaters?
You can do that one, I think. He's the researcher.
Peter?
Wait a second. We've got millions of facts screaming through our heads at the moment.
Okay, well, I'll get it. Bodzi is a radar site nearby,
right.
And they track the objects. Actually, Watton did, too. And Bodzi, they invented radar there, actually, in the late 30s, I believe, 39 or so.
Mm-hmm.
And RAF Watton actually tracked these objects, and we did send people to recover, borrow the tapes the next day after the third night. And they were never returned. That's another issue where accountability and there is a paper trail. Chuck DeCaro, the former CNN correspondent who did the Bentwaters thing in the 80s, has said to us, in our interview, is that the way to follow this paper trail is through the nuclear documentation, not UFO.
Extraordinary event. Larry or Peter, this is for either one of you guys. In your meeting, you mentioned Chuck DeCaro. In your meeting with CNN, he was a special correspondent to CNN at the time. Chuck tells you that he's been hired as a consultant to the Air Force and other agencies to look, to work on new kinds of warfare. He goes on to say that there are things in the paranormal arena that he sees simply as science undefined. And he touches on such things as remote viewing. Now, what does all this have to do with Bentwaters? Is there a connection between what might have happened or what happened there and what he is talking about here?
That's purely speculative. Chuck had told us a number of things that really raised the hair on the back of my neck as far as advanced technology, weapons tests,
mm-hmm.
and usages of things that we now consider paranormal as future military tactical devices. But because of his level of clearance, he only was able to hint at some of the things as far as what he knew. A lot of it just remains open to wonder about whether or not there are connections between some of what Chuck speculated on that your readers can read at in depth in the book and what happened at RAF Bentwaters we can only speculate on as well.
Well, I say no.
Yeah.
You say no, Larry?
And that's the beauty of Pete and I's partnership in the 10 years we were doing this,
mm-hmm.
is that we conclude different things. Of course, I lived through an aspect. Pete and I both had an experience at Bentwaters in 88 and when they were still open. But in my mind and any other witness to this, no matter what element or what night they were involved in, to whatever degree, this stuff was not remote viewing once again, lighthouses, Elvis Presley, any kind of this these explanations that they come up with that we mistook a lighthouse that had been there for 100 years.
Yeah, and I didn't mean to.
It's just a brilliant question, but in this phenomena, the detractors, and of course skeptical people is good, and hopefully we wrote this book hopefully for people outside the preaching to the choir.
Mm-hmm.
We want to reach people because it's not really even a UFO book, and that may disappoint some folks out there also, but it's more of a story of survival and life and how this phenomena touches one person's life, 50 people's lives, and it's something I think most people can relate to is the human experience, because that's all we're
right.
with.
And,
okay.
Michael, it's important, as you know from your reading of the book, to at least touch upon the fact that the amounts of corroborating physical evidence that back up the reality of what Larry witnessed are on the record, and that includes extraordinary results to the soil analysis of the area where this happened, not to mention Larry's Air Force and civilian medical records. So it's not just a matter of speculation or hyperbole. This is as grounded as a legal case.
Okay, let's take a call. We've got Chris calling in from our affiliate KMMS in Bozeman, Montana. Good evening, Chris.
Hi, good evening. I got a question as far as acceptance of the phenomena. Like, you know, it's been dated clear back to biblical times and stuff like that. And, I mean, it's like, you know, it's so hard for people to accept this. And my question is why?
I think, Chris, it conflicts in so many ways with so much of the traditions, in case of most Americans, the Judeo-Christian traditions that we've been brought up with. And most of us would rather not surrender the mythologies that were imparted to us as children. It shatters too much of our day-to-day reality, and I think it may just be locked in there for a lot of folks.
Yeah, because, I mean, there's even references in the Bible to it, like, you know, in Revelations where they're talking about attending to other flocks and stuff like that.
My favorite.
I mean, the straight odds are, like, you know, for every star that we can see in the sky, there's 100 we can't. And the odds of other, you know, planets developing in the same lines as Earth is just astounding. I mean, it's, and it just seems so hard for people to accept.
Well, I think that's a particular human arrogance that's been sort of passed down from generation to generation. Many of us would have to readjust whose image we were made in other intelligences.
Okay, we got to go.
I think a lot of it rests on that.
Okay, thanks, Chris, for your call. I got to move on. We got to get another call in here. Let's take another call. We've got Sue calling in from our affiliate in Denver, KHOW. Good evening.
Hi.
Hi.
I have a couple questions. What did the creatures look like, and did they tamper at all with the nuclear weapons that were stored at Mount Waters?
Also, you know, I don't even call these things creatures or aliens, and we're stuck. Pete and I had a lot of trouble. I always say, God, there's like four phrases that are used in our culture, creatures, beings, aliens, this and that. I don't know what they were, but they were alive. They were almost translucent. They had the big eye, cat-like eyes kind of thing, but they were real. Almost you could see through these things at some time, and that's where some people have said it was a projection. I didn't personally feel that, but some of these things could pass through solid equipment, light holes and things. And the second question on did they tamper, well, I think these vehicles firing, and again, this isn't me saying, these are command people in the United States Air Force saying it, firing beams of light down that penetrated these bunkers that housed tactical nuclear weapons, affecting them, they did tamper with it, sure.
For what purpose do you think?
Well, only they could answer that, and I'm not being sarcastic, but I don't know what purpose, because this isn't the first time this has happened. They did it to SAC bases and disrupted NORAD in 1975. Very well documented chain of events in Timothy Good's books, and also Clear Intent, or the UFO Cover-Up, it's called now, by Larry Fawcett and Barry Greenwood. They document those events with official documentation from the FOIA very well, and I recommend those books to you, because it's something to write to your congressman and senator about. All this stuff is, for God's sake. Yeah.
Can I ask you?
Oops, I'm sorry, Sue, we had to go.
I spied Sue anyway, though.
Yeah. Oh, boy. Okay, guys, we've only touched the surface. Larry, I want to get some closing comments from you. I know that you've had physical, I guess you had physical problems as a result of this.
Yes, myself and other witnesses, in fact, back to John Burroughs also.
Mm-hmm.
Anyone that was in close proximity to these things, these events left very high levels of radiation in the area, some type of radiation. I had flash burns to the retinas of my eyes, which are much better now, and a high white blood cell count for a number of years, showing exposure to a radioactive element. This is from doctors that would normally not be seen for 20 years. I was showing it in 4 years. But I'm not alone in this. I do try to document my own, of course, but I'm just one of many people that suffered from this.
Are you angry?
Am I angry?
Mm-hmm.
No, I actually feel younger than I have in about 16, 17 years since this happened.
You know,
because I finally have said my piece, and I can move on in my life. And, you know, humor is a great thing, and music and things like that. I did want to say one thing, just so it's not too heavy. But you mentioned Mojo Nixon earlier.
Mm-hmm.
I saw this thing on a dressing room one time. I was with Stevie Ray Vaughan, dear friend of mine, big supporter of this book, who never lived long enough to see it, but he knows the truth anyway now. But it said Mojo Nixon, Richard Nixon. Coincidence? I think not. So we move on with humor. But I'm just thrilled to have this book out, and I hope it does help some other folks that have been
brutalized by the situations, by UFO research community, and, you know, the ramifications of going forward on this sort of stuff, because they're all darn brave, and we did this for them.
We put our hearts into this, and everything that we made went into this for 10 years. I've never been prouder to have worked on a project, and I think it'll stand up to the test of time. Yeah. It's a book that I hope every one of your listeners will read.
And I have to say again, I've read it, and it's a very, very interesting book, and it's a very good contribution to all of this big mystery that we're trying to find out what it's all about. I want to thank you guys for being on the program tonight, and I want to also let my listeners know, particularly my Denver listeners, that we are going to be bringing Larry and Peter to the Denver area in April. We don't have all the details cemented yet, but please stay tuned to this program, and you'll be able to hear when that date will be, and we're going to bring them to town, and they're going to give a presentation about their about the book and about Larry's experience. And of course, Peter, you've got something to say too, because I guess you've been up to your earlobes, I guess, in some mystery since you got involved in this. So we're gonna, you know, we'll get into that too. But anyway, thank you guys very much for being on the program.
Thank you for having us on, Mike.
Okay, well, that wraps it up for us tonight.